Live from WNUR News, I'm Alex Harrison. You're listening to the 7 o'clock news on WNUR 89.3 FM HD1, Evanston, Chicago. It's Friday, February 4th, 2022. Tonight on WNUR News, a look at seasonal affective disorder and Northwestern's infamous winners. What makes romantic movies so good at tugging your heartstrings? Peering down the rabbit hole of bizarre business inspiration posts on Instagram. Those stories and more coming up right now. Thanks for tuning in to WNUR News. We extend our thanks to the fine folks over at WNUR Sports for plugging us during their broadcast. And we offer our congratulations to the women's basketball team for their win tonight over Purdue. In Campus Local tonight, unless you're a quote-unquote winter person, you're probably feeling the emotional weight of the infamous Northwestern winter right now. But what's really behind wintertime depression? Reporter Angelina Campanile talks to a psychologist to break down the science behind what's known as seasonal affective disorder and how to tell the difference between sad and just being sad.
Single-digit temperatures, 5 p.m. sunsets, post-holiday season blues, and salty dorm room floors from snow boots. Just a few things that trigger a Northwestern student's winter depression. It's a real thing, winter depression. But technically, it's called seasonal affective disorder, aka SAD. A lot of college students feel a bit more down in the wintertime, so I want to know how to tell the difference between just some Evanston winter blues and actual depression. So I sat down with Dr. Katherine Hansen, a psychologist at Swedish Hospital in Chicago, to learn more.
All right, so let's start with the basics. What is seasonal affective disorder?
Seasonal affective disorder is a type of depression, and it tends to be triggered by shorter days. And sometimes I think colloquially, we tend to be a little more dismissive of seasonal affective disorder. Oh, it's just the winter blahs. But really, it can be, it ranges from mild to severe. It can be a fairly significant type of mental health issue that can really negatively impact people's lives. So I'm so glad we're getting the opportunity to talk about it today.
Yeah. So how do you know if you have seasonal depression or you just have those Monday blues? Like, I'm not really feeling it today, versus something you should go to a psychologist to discuss.
Right. So again, it follows, tends to really follow this seasonal pattern. And for those that really do have seasonal affective disorder, it will tend to, for the majority of people, it will tend to start kind of late fall, early winter. And over the years, people will recognize, wow, you know, after Thanksgiving, I just kind of start to take a dive, or whatever the time frame is for them. But it's fairly predictable. And people start to know that about themselves. Like, boy, I really have a tough time. Mm-hmm. Monday blues, my kids often refer to the Sunday scaries. Mm-hmm. Those things tend to be a little more temporary. So you might be kind of anxious or depressed one day, but it will pretty much resolve within the next day or two.
You mentioned, you know, light has a huge impact on this. In places with less daylight, are there more people who suffer from this?
Yeah, that's a risk factor. Is actually, if you live further from the equator, we do tend to see people, there's a higher prevalence. So in the United States, actually, seasonal affective disorder impacts about 5% of the adult population. The body's response to that, and then the brain's response to that, can be, can kind of put us into some a depressive space. So some of that may be related to serotonin, which is a neurotransmitter, a chemical in the brain that really is responsible for, or one of them that is responsible for mood. And so we do feel like there may be a link between sunlight or daylight and serotonin. And if they're, you know, less light, less daylight, may cause decreases in serotonin, which can be problematic and lead to mood disorders such as depression and seasonal affective depression in this case.
So what are some of those signs or symptoms that you may be suffering from seasonal affective disorder?
There really can be a lot of fatigue. So, and even if you're sleeping a lot, in fact, you may even be oversleeping, you'll still feel very tired and fatigued. Sometimes there's weight gain, which can happen to all of us eating comfort food this time of year, but often it's a real craving for food, especially carbohydrates, that can also be another symptom.
When you mention oversleeping, like how do you tell if you're just completely overworked and tired, even for the doctors working in the hospital? Like how can you tell if you're just overworked and you're burnt out from your job or from school?
Yeah, that's a great question because, I mean, sleep looks different at different stages in the lifespan.
Right.
You know, we know teenagers, young adults, college students probably need more sleep. Your brain is still actively developing during that time of life. And older adults tend to need less, and their sleep patterns are a little different. I think the main thing to kind of keep an eye on is, especially in this conversation of seasonal affective disorder, I think is when you have had quite a bit of sleep, do you then feel fairly rested? Are you able to, like, does it
like jump back into it? Do you feel better afterwards?
And if you're sleeping a lot, but still feeling incredibly fatigued and like you could sleep all day. I mean, if people say that, but really where they could sleep all day, then we want to kind of keep an eye out for, is there a seasonal affective component to this? And are we moving into depression territory?
So how do you get that boost in serotonin, melatonin? Like, what are some typical treatments for this?
Well, there's no real way to prevent seasonal affective disorder. I mean, that's just going to kind of come, but there are some pretty effective ways to potentially treat it. So we have kind of three major methods of treatment for seasonal affective disorder. And I think the first line treatment is something called phototherapy, which is a light box. It's a specific kind of device that emits a certain amount of power or lumens, and you're supposed to sit like a few feet away, do it fairly early in the morning, kind of very within the first hour of waking up, and that can mimic kind of really alerting your system to light and daylight. It also, another type of treatment for seasonal affective disorder are the treatments that we often use for major depression, which are like antidepressants. A third method of treatment would be psychotherapy, especially cognitive behavioral therapy. You know, kind of trying to make sure that there are healthy behaviors that are going on, trying to help with motivation a little bit. That can also be another really effective way of treating seasonal affective disorder.
It seems like ever since COVID, everyone kind of is more anxiety, increased depression, just not feeling it, you know, in all jobs and students, you know, working from home, doing school from home, a lot more stress. Do you think there can be such a thing as like quarantine affective disorder or like COVID induced depression? Is that it? Could an event or, you know, at this point, what, 2 years now, a 2 year long event have like the same or similar effect?
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question. And I mean, the short answer to your question is yes. I mean, do we have a diagnosis like that? No. But if you think about the ways in which COVID kind of came into our lives, and of course, early on and now, there's a lot of anxiety around, well, I don't want to get sick, or I don't want to get other people I love sick. And that creates a lot of anxiety. The way to manage from a public health standpoint COVID has been to pull back, isolate, quarantine, do all those things, which are really helpful in my mind for, because we're in the middle of a public health emergency still, but it really ends up, it has undermined some of our most effective coping mechanisms, which are
like
to
talking to
lean
people,
on other people for support, to socialize, to do things, to get out. So, I mean, we're stuck in this kind of really between a rock and a hard place, which is, we know we need to do these things to keep one another safe, to keep ourselves safe, to protect our community. But if you're starting to feel depressed, it's, I, it's, it, it's been a little bit of a frustrating time, I have to say, as a therapist myself and with my colleagues, of like, you know, some of the things we would really encourage people to do, some of those behavioral activation
mechanisms now, you can't of coping. Do that. Oh.
Yeah, we're kind of out of luck. So we have to get a little more creative.
In your office, especially, like, have you particularly seen or diagnosed more people with depression now than before the pandemic?
We've seen a threefold increase in depressive disorders.
Threefold. Wow.
More in younger adults than older adults. It's just been hard. I think a lot of people just kind of go, oh, well, you know, it's just, this is the way winter is for me. But I think it's, winter is a season. It's a quarter of our year, a quarter of our lives. And to just kind of say, well, too bad, I'm just going to put up with it and deal with it and be stoic. There may be some really actually effective ways of making you feel a lot better. And so I just encourage people to take their mental health really seriously and seek out support and help for that if that's something they're experiencing.
For WNUR News, I'm Angelina Campanile.
I always like spring quarter better anyway. Moving on now to arts and entertainment. With Valentine's Day only 10 days away, many students are turning to their favorite romantic films to get in the spirit. Reporter Catherine Odom talks to romance movie aficionados, a student filmmaker, and a relationship expert to get to the bottom of why we love watching love.
Everyone has a favorite romance movie.
10 Things I Hate About You.
Lost in Translation.
Pride and Prejudice.
When Harry Met Sally. Love and Basketball. Friends with Benefits.
Whether you watch them with your best friend, your significant other, or all by yourself, romances and romantic comedies have a special power to make us laugh, cry, and imagine our crush standing outside our window with a boombox. WNUR's arts and entertainment editor, Maria Camaño, said she watches romance movies religiously with her roommates.
I'm like a hopeless romantic.
You'll always have parents.
You complete me.
I wish I'd done everything on earth with you.
These iconic lines have filled the dreams of generations of romantics just like Camaño. One of Camaño's roommates, Natalia Camino, said she likes watching romances with her roommates because they all have different opinions and preferences.
We all have very varied taste when it comes to men or just like romance in general.
Yeah.
And so watching rom-coms together is always entertaining because we'll have different takes.
Camaño's other roommate, Amina Al-Masri, said that she loves the enduring power of classic romances.
There are themes in love and in those love stories that are still important to modern audiences, and like that's why they still elicit such an emotional reaction.
But what is it that makes stories of love so timeless and universal?
Part of it is like living vicariously through characters, which is, I think, why a lot of people enjoy watching rom-coms.
That's Kobe Resnick, a sophomore radio, television, and film major and filmmaker. Resnick is the cinematographer for an upcoming student-produced film with a romantic storyline. Dr. Alexander Solomon, a CESPE professor, licensed clinical psychologist, and the host of the Reimagining Love podcast, said it's in our nature to be drawn to romance in the movies we watch.
We're hardwired to be social creatures, so we are, our default setting is to be fascinated by relationships, especially romantic relationships. We are sort of organically voyeuristic about other people's love stories.
Solomon herself said she enjoys watching romance on screen and even uses it as a teaching aid in her class, Marriage 101.
Story of Us with Bruce Willis and Michelle Pfeiffer. Good Will Hunting, Matt Damon and Amy Driver. Those are the two that are on the top of my head. And we would use a movie clip to demonstrate a concept in action.
I want to hear you say that you don't love me. Because if you say that,
Solomon used that clip from Good Will Hunting to teach about how trauma can impact our relationships. She said there can be a downside to on-screen romance, though.
They put us at risk of feeling confused by our own struggles in relationships, because there's no way of avoiding comparing our own love stories
to the rom-com love story.
Solomon said she also wishes there were more representation in romance movies so that more people can see themselves in these stories.
When there's an absence of, for example, queer love stories, it makes it really difficult then for somebody to say, like, I deserve this, I am entitled to this, this is something that's for me, right? That's why representation matters so much.
Romance movies can also perpetuate unrealistic expectations and stereotypes for romantic relationships. Resnick said his team is actively working to combat these pitfalls in his upcoming film.
The expectations that men have in movies, which is like they have to play the stoic, like quiet, mysterious figure. I think like women are generally not realistic characters in most rom-coms. Or they're not people, they're pretty two-dimensional.
Resnick added that he appreciates when a rom-com breaks norms and avoids cliche. But sometimes, he admitted, even the cheesiest rom-coms can just make us laugh and feel good.
I was like, why am I even listening to begin with? You're a virgin who can't drive.
That's a clip from my all-time favorite rom-com, Clueless. I've watched it at countless sleepovers over the years. For me, the power of Clueless is not in Alicia Silverstone's yellow plaid outfit, or the slightly questionable storyline where she ends up with her stepbrother. It's in spending time with friends and bonding through an inherently human experience.
I feel like there is like a real sisterhood in watching romance movies, because I think it's something about like, you know, media that is not accepted as like maybe serious or like good. People are like, oh, it's so trashy, it's corny, it's cringy, but like, you know, it's fun.
So near, far, wherever you are, I hope you find some time to enjoy a romance movie this Valentine's Day. Catherine Odom, WNUR News.
We are glad that you choose to listen to WNUR News. Meanwhile, out there in oddities, one of the stranger content genres to creep its way onto Instagram's Explore page is that of the Business Bro Inspirational Post. Reporter Connor Casario takes a closer look at these posts and examines the internet trends behind them.
That is the 2020 song, Don't Doubt Your Vibe, by, believe it or not, Tesla and SpaceX CEO Elon Musk. It is strange, to say the least, that Musk, the richest man in the world, the net worth of approximately $230 billion as of February 4th, 2021, released a basic-sounding EDM track. Musk is known for being a bit peculiar, maybe even a little unhinged, but while browsing through Instagram posts a few months ago, I discovered a strange online phenomenon, idolizing celebrity, internet culture, and a particular business lifestyle that makes certain sense of the song. I assembled this segment to expose a broader audience to this phenomenon, which I find equal parts bizarre and incredibly fascinating, and to shed some light on its underlying causes. First, I need to describe it, a surprisingly difficult task. Instagram posts typical of the phenomenon feature superficially useful or inspiring business and life advice. This advice usually sits beside a photo of a celebrity entrepreneur like Musk, or a mainstream celebrity like Ryan Reynolds. And that description, admittedly, isn't the best. To give you all a better sense of what I'm talking about, I recruited my friends Jackson Spellman and Catherine Ferreira O'Connor, who graciously agreed to read some of these Instagram posts.
Elon Musk says his kids were educated by YouTube and Reddit. Now he's ready to send them to Mars.
That post, published under an account called @Elon_Musk_the_Martian, and narrated for you by O'Connor, features those words beside a photo of Elon Musk with three of his sons. It's one of the first posts I saw of this phenomenon. I remember feeling struck by its strange, unmistakable intentions of inspiration. Its focus on Musk, a celebrity entrepreneur, and YouTube and Reddit, notable purveyors of internet culture, are typical of the phenomenon. Other such posts go beyond inspiration and claim to offer practical, almost folksy-seeming life advice.
Before you get married, discuss bills, parenting styles, credit, debit, religion, how to deal with family, what beliefs will be instilled in your children, childhood traumas, sexual expectations, partner expectations, financial expectations, family health history, mental health history, bucket lists, dream home, careers and education, political views, and whatever else comes to mind. Love alone is not enough.
This advice from @billionaire_word, superimposed over a photo of Anne Hathaway, and narrated for you all by Spellman, is characteristically suspect. And that post is far from the strangest, as some advice from @moneybusinessmoves, placed beside a photo of Henry Cavill, the British actor, attests.
You ready?
Not every man who's nice to you is flirting with you. Some mothers raise their sons to be a gentleman.
It would seem that this phenomenon appeals to a predominantly male audience, as that man-affirming post indicates. The overall tension seems to be to affirm, under the guise of advice or this sort of observation, the viewpoints of its audience.
The faker you are, the bigger your circle will be. The realer you are, the smaller your circle will be. These are well-known facts.
The same is true for this post from @IncomeTools. Ryan Reynolds never said that. The apparent concern for superficiality ironically belies the overwhelming superficiality of the whole phenomenon. Generally speaking, it's nothing more than shallow, clickbaity, often just plain incorrect fluff. Few are more superficial or misguided than a post by the account @KaizenExecutive, which shows a photo of Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum of Dubai, standing next to the man-made Palm Islands of Dubai.
Ruler of Dubai once said, "My friends were building sandcastles on the beach. They laughed at me as I tried to build sandcastle on the water. I now take them to see the Palm Islands."
The Sheikh, of course, never said any of that. And to imply that the Sheikh, the hereditary ruler of Dubai, is self-made is totally laughable. Overall, this phenomenon seems to be concerned with the trappings of celebrity and business success above all else. In this context, the self-aggrandizing creation of an EDM song by Elon Musk perhaps makes a little sense. Internet ecosystem celebrates him and what he has accomplished, and he responds in kind.
If this is what a Sigma grind set looks like, you can count me out. Now we'd like to introduce you to a new recurring segment on WNUR News, State of the N-Union, a weekly recap of events and actions from Northwestern's Associated Student Government. Reporter Paz Baum has the scoop on ASG's Senate meeting this past Wednesday.
Welcome to State of the N-Union, your weekly ASG Senate coverage. Today, we're talking all things COVID. At Wednesday's meeting, Senators Joe Scaletti and Dahlia Siegel Miller introduced their co-authored bill that calls on the university to reinstate mandatory weekly COVID testing for all students who have not had COVID in the past 90 days. Usually, bills are introduced 1 week and voted on the next week to allow senators time to speak with their constituents. But given the time-sensitive nature of this topic, the Senate voted to both introduce and vote on this bill on Wednesday. An amendment was added that requires Northwestern to provide at-home tests as soon as supply allows and to reimburse students for the tests that they buy with their own money. Some senators voiced concern regarding conditions and possible overcrowding in Hinman, the university's isolation housing. Others noted that the risk of illness for Northwestern students tends to be low because of the high vaccination rate on campus. Coming from another angle, other senators proposed more frequent testing, similar to last spring's 2 tests a week mandate, in order to catch more cases. Ultimately, the bill passed with 20 yeses of the 23 present senators. This mandatory weekly COVID testing bill passed in the Senate, but this doesn't mean that students will now have to go to the Jacobs Center once a week. The next step is for ASG representatives to meet with NU administration to negotiate. Representatives will explain that the Senate, which represents the student body, voted in favor of reinstating the weekly testing mandate. It will then be up to the administration officials to decide whether or not to make this testing a requirement. Either way, we'll be back next week with an update. That's all for today's State of the N Union. Check in next Friday to see what ASG has been up to between now and then. For WNUR News, I'm Passbaum.
Medill on the Hill's got nothing on us now. Taking a look at the weather. Although Evanston was able to miss the lake effect snow seen elsewhere in Chicagoland, the forecast is nevertheless dreary. You can expect cloudy skies with little precipitation throughout the weekend and into next week. Tonight will hit a low of 8 degrees, Saturday will stay between 20 and 15 degrees all day, and Sunday will just barely hit 32 before dipping back down to 15. That's all for WNUR News at 7 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on our Twitter, at WNUR News, and on our Instagram, at WNUR News 893. You can listen to these and other stories of the day on our Spotify, Google Podcasts, and SoundCloud. You can also find us on our website, WNUR.news. Our reporters for today are Angelina Campanile, Catherine Odom, Connor Casario, and Paz Baum. Our producer today is Zach McCrary. From all of us here at WNUR News, I'm Alex Harrison. Catch our next news break on Monday, February 7th at 6 p.m. Thank you so much for listening. Now, back to scheduled programming.